This is HPR episode 2699 entitled Bash Tips 15 and is part of the series Bash Scripting. It is hosted by Dave Morris and is about 30 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is some of the pitfalls when using loops in Bash.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello everybody, it's Dave Morris. Welcome to Hacker Public Radio. I'm going to do another show about Bash in the group that I'm calling Bash Tips under the heading of Bash Scripting. There's a series called Bash Scripting. This is number 15, and this time I want to just talk, I think it's going to be fairly brief, about when you're writing loops in Bash and some of the problems that can befall. It's really a thing that was raised in the comments to an earlier show in this sub-series, and I'll be getting on to a bit more detail about what the comments were in a little while, so I won't digress now. So we've looked at for loops. I spent a show looking at how they were structured, and before that I looked at while and until loops, and now I want to just look at some of the things that can catch you out with these loops. Loops are great in Bash. They're actually quite easy to use and very, very useful. But there are a few areas where you can be caught out. And I've certainly been caught out myself and wondered what was going on. And I thought I'd pass on what I learned so that you can get the benefit of it. There's loads and loads of information out there and if you care to go searching. But as usual with these things, if you don't know to search for a problem because you haven't encountered the problem, then it's difficult, and if you fall over the problem, it might be quite a long hiatus in whatever you're doing. So a main issue is when you use loops in relation to a pipe or a pipeline. I discovered this when I was researching this. Bash refers to a feature known as a pipeline, where you can have a sequence of one or more commands separated by a vertical bar character. I didn't quite realize that a pipeline and a pipe are slightly different things. I've been using them interchangeably. But the point of it is that one command produces output and the pipe symbol, the vertical bar, connects to another command or script or whatever it is, which uses that output as its input. I'm going to spend some time looking at pipelines later on in this series of Bash tips, but I just thought I'd better cover a little bit about this just to explain what's going on in the context of this loop issue. So the series of commands and the vertical bar control characters is called a pipeline, and the connection of one command to another is called a pipe. I'm not really sure that that's a very helpful terminology, but just in case you find it and find yourself puzzled. So I've got an example that shows an echo, which outputs the string hello world with mixed case, and it's being piped to a sed expression, sed hyphen e, and then what it's doing is it's doing an s substitution command, which is substituting all the characters that it finds in the lines that it receives. So it's only getting one. It replaces them all with themselves forced to uppercase. There's a backslash u construct which lets you do that. I did cover this rather briefly in the said series, but anyway, you might want to do this. I don't know why you didn't just type it in uppercase in the first place, but you know, this is the nature of examples. So the echo command writes the arguments it's been given, which is just a string hello world. It writes to what's called the standard output channel, and then the vertical bar pipe character causes Bash to send that output to the sed command. And sed then sees its input coming from that echo. I mean, I've used this in other cases, in sed series, in the bash series, all sorts of things. So if you've been following these, you've this is not a surprise. You probably know about these already, but just in case this is new to you. Then the sed command, having got its input from the echo down the pipe, then does stuff to it and prints it out on standard output, which is it's going to be the terminal if you're doing this on the command line, and you see the result. And one of the things about this pipeline is that each command that you see, so the echo and the invocation of sed, is in its own subshell. Now, a subshell is really a separate process. Unix and Linux and other related operating systems work on the principle that you are running a process when you log in, and many of the things that you do generate sub-processes within it, within that main login shell. So the subshells are seen as child processes of the parent, which is the parent shell, the login shell. Or indeed, you can have another process creating another sub-process if you want. But one of the features of the way processes work within Unix and Linux is that you can't change things in the parent process from a child process. So you, in particular, you can write to files, of course, that they share, but you can't send environmental variables back into the parent. So this, I hope, will become apparent or relevant, seem a bit more relevant as I go into some of the problem areas. Let's look at piping into a loop where this particular example I'm going to describe the end, the destination of the pipe is a loop. So I've got an example here, and this is a common thing you'll see people doing, is to run ls to list out a list of files and piping that to a loop. So I've got ls space asterisk dot mp3, then a vertical bar, and then a while loop, while read name. So reading whatever we get on each line into a variable called name, then the do part of the while, then echo the contents of name, and then semicolon done. This is not a particularly useful thing to do because ls will output stuff all by itself. That's what it's for. But and to feed it to a loop is not is in this like this, where it's simply echoing what is passed to the loop, is not useful at all. But it serves to demonstrate what I'm trying to explain. Now, it's not wise to use ls like this. In fact, this was one of the discussions we had following one of the earlier shows. ls, you find, is very often aliased to a version, or in fact is defaulted to a version of itself, which produces coloured output or adds extra characters to file names to signal what type of file they are, whether they are executable, or maybe they might be coloured differently. If they are soft links or hard links, they will be marked somehow. If they're directories, they'll be marked differently. So you get a lot of other data in the stream that's coming from ls that may not be all that relevant to what you're trying to do in your loop. You can ensure that ls is the plain ls, doesn't have all the bells and whistles switched on. What you usually find is that ls is an alias, and you can switch that off with the unalias command. So unalias ls switches off, it deletes the alias. And then if you invoke ls, then it works as you need for a loop. But since you probably wanted the alias and you wanted it to be kept in that form, the rest of your command line session is not going to have ls in the version that somebody, presumably you, has defaulted to. So it's not the best way of dealing with this sort of situation. I also made the note in the show notes that file names in Unix and Linux can be quite complicated. They can contain spaces in them, and loops usually separate out their input on the basis of a space, you can control that. So you might have a give a loop a read in a loop, like in the example, a single file name which has got a space in it, and it's read as two separate strings. So you don't want to be doing that with ls if you can help it. You need to be taking special action to deal with that. I'm not doing so in this particular case, but it is an issue that you need to be bearing in mind. Now, for the purposes of this demo, I have a username on my system which is kept for HPR shows and stuff, and within it I created a bunch of empty files just in order to demonstrate what ls would do with a list of files. And in the footnote to the long notes, I show how I made these 10 dummy mp3 files, just files with the mp3 suffix, in a loop using the user share dict words file that contains useful and interesting words. There's a short explanation in the footnotes. I won't explain it further here. So I show here, if you unalias the ls command, then you do ls asterisk dot mp3 piped into while read name semicolon do echo then in quotes dollar name semicolon done, then you get a list of names, and the names that were generated are just random names out of this dictionary file, things like astonish.mp3, berettas.mp3, and so on. So you can use ls, but it's not the wisest thing to do. I'm going to give you some alternatives shortly. The while loop in this example is running in a subshell, as we've already ascertained. But problems can arise because this has happened. And this is where you start finding some of the issues. So, for example, you might want to count the files that you've got in your directory. So here's an actual example where the first command is count equals zero. So we're setting a variable count to zero. Then there's ls being piped into a while, reading each file name into a variable called name. And for each one, we also increment the variable count, and that's the entire loop. And then at the end of it, we echo the value of count. But in the worked example, the answer comes back as zero. Why does this happen? Well, the answer is that the count variable is being incremented in the loop, as you've asked, but it's not the count variable that you set to zero in the first instance. It's a copy. When the subshell or the subprocess is being created, it inherits the variables, the environmental variables, from the parent, and it then works with them. So you can pass information through to the child, but when it's as it's being incremented, but when the it's doing what you would expect it to do. You could print it out and see if you wished. But when the pipeline ends and that process ends, the copy of the variable is thrown away. So the variable called count in the parent process is not the same one, and it still contains zero. And this is because, as I already said, Bash can't pass back values from the subshell. Now, in the notes, the show was 2651. In the comments to that show, we had a suggestion from Clagcare, so another area where this might cause problems. He was talking about doing things with arrays. So he sets an array called items to nothing, to a null array. We're going to be looking at arrays soon. It's in my to-do list to cover quite soon. We've sort of seen them in passing at various points through this sub-series, but we've never sat down and examined them in detail. Then there's the next line is something called produce items, which is a program or a function that generates individual strings or numbers which we're feeding to a loop. And the loop is a while loop. It's using read to read into a variable called item, and then the array called items is being appended to with each item that's being collected by the loop. So you've got items plus equals, then in parentheses the variable item with a dollar, so it's substituting it. So This will actually cause an array to be extended by adding each individual item into it at the end, and that'll all be fine and dandy. But if we then, in Clacky's example, we have a thing do stuff with, and we give it the array, nothing's going to get done. Nothing will happen because do stuff with doesn't get any elements in the array, because the array that was processed in the while loop is a copy of the parent level array, and is not, that's not the one that's being appended to. The parent one, I should say, is not the one that's being appended to. It's the child version of it, the child copy. So this is what Clacky says about it. Items, that's the array, gets updated just fine in a subshell, but then after the pipe has finished executing, execution continues in the parent shell where the array is still empty. So arrays inside the loop and outside the loop are separate. So it's just another example of what variables are, how variables are available in and outside, inside and outside a sub process. Now, one way to avoid these pipe type pitfalls is not use a pipe, because there's no real way of avoiding the loss of the variables, the invisibility of the variables, or whatever you like to put it. We looked at process substitution back in show number 6 of the Bash Tips series, episode 2045. We did actually talk about the pipe problem just then, but it's relevant perhaps to talk more about it here. We're going to look in more detail here. In that particular show, we did look at how you could use process substitution. That's where you create a process which is running a command or list of commands inside parentheses. The first parenthesis, the left parenthesis, is preceded immediately by a less than sign. So what that means is there's a process that's running, and it's sending its output from the whole thing that it's doing there into whatever is on the left hand side. So my example, again, unaliases ls, assuming that you've got ls. We're going to use ls again, because we haven't looked yet at anything else to do a better job. But we're going to remove the alias to make things simpler. And we're setting count to 0. And then we start off with a while loop, and we read into the variable name as before, semicolon do. Then in double parentheses, we've got count plus plus, so we're incrementing count. Semicolon done. Then there's a less than sign. That's a redirection, which is another subject we haven't looked at properly yet, and that's coming quite soon as well. Then it's followed by the process substitution. So that's a less than open parenthesis ls space asterisk dot mp3 close parenthesis. What's actually going to happen in that particular line is that the loop will really, I think, the process substitution will fire up, will generate its output, and the loop will consume it as it's being produced. So it's pretty much exactly the same as doing it the other way around, the ls at the beginning piped into the loop, except that in this particular case the sub process contains the ls. So the ls is just generating the data, it's not manipulating variables. The while is not in a subprocess. There's no pipe here anyway. So the count variable is not being lost. It's not a copy, it's the parental version. So the last line is echo in quotes double quotes dollar count, and we get back the answer 10. I actually ran this on the list of files that I was talking about earlier on, and there were 10 of them. So we get back the right answer. The array thing that Clacky was talking about could also be remodeled in the same sort of way, and I've shown it here. I think it's probably best if I don't read this one out, because the last one was quite complex. I think you'll get the gist of it if you look at the example. I've included a downloadable script, bash15ex1.sh, which is a simplified version of the array example that Clacker mentioned, and in this particular case it's filling the array with random words from the infamous user share dict words, the dictionary that I like to use so much, and it's only picking out five of them. It's a big file actually, so there's loads and loads of them, and it's filling that array, and then the script is going through a for loop and printing out the contents of the array, and each array element has got a number to the left of it, starting at one. So it just generates five random words. There's another example, bash15ex2.sh, which does something very similar, but it uses a for loop where the loop is being populated from a process, what's it called? Command substitution. I get confused between process substitution and command substitution. You'll see it in the listing here. I didn't run this one for you. I'll leave you to, if you're interested enough to try it, to play around with it yourself. There's just an alternative way of populating an array, if that's what you want to do. There are other ways, and I'm going to save them for when I do the array show. So while I'm on the subject of collecting file names and all that good stuff and processing them in some sort of way, I'm going to just talk about an alternative to ls. There's a command called find which gives you a lot more control over what's selected and also what is produced in the listing that comes out the other end. The find command is very powerful. There's a whole GNU find utils manual. I'm thinking that maybe I should do a show on this at some stage, or indeed if anybody else wants to do that, they're very welcome. But there's a lot to talk about with find, and I don't want to go into a series of shows, but pick out some of the really important bits and talk about them would be a useful thing to do. I'm just going to speak very, very, very briefly about find in this particular episode. So one of the typical ways of using find is you type the command find, you tell it which directory to perform the find operation on, and then you give it some options. So if we're working with the directory full of MP3 files, empty MP3 files, then you might type find space, then a dot, then follow that with a space hyphen name space, then in quotes, single quotes, *.mp3, close quote, space hyphen print. So then the dot just means the current directory. We're assuming we're in the current directory and we're doing this. The hyphen name option defines a glob pattern to match the files that we want to get back. You need to quote this because otherwise it'll be expanded as the command is being processed rather than being handed down to the command itself to be processed, to be expanded within it. And the hyphen print option causes the file to be reported. Find also reports the path of the file. Since it's local to the current directory, then you see ./ and then the name of the file. And I've shown an example of it doing this in the notes. Unlike ls, find doesn't sort the files, so they come out in a sort of random order. I'm not sure what the order is. It's probably the directory order or something. And the other thing about find is that by default it will search subdirectories as well. So I've done an example here where I've created a subdirectory which I called subdir, and in it I created another empty MP3 file using touch, and then I did a find using pretty much the same arguments, except that after hyphen name I've got in square brackets AI close square brackets *.mp3. So that means only show me files whose names begin with an A or an I. That was just because to save the length of the notes, really, because I knew there's a file in the top directory begins with an A and the one in the subdirectory begins with an I. What you get back is /subdir/ignore-this-file, which is what I called the file .mp3, and .astonish.mp3. So those are the two files that match those criteria, but it's included the subdirectory, which ls would not have done. There's another option you can add to find, which is -max depth, which limits the searches to, which can limit the searches to the current directory. It actually controls how many directories down it goes. If you set it to max depth 1, max depth followed by a space and a 1, put that in the same command we had before, then you only see the file called astonish.mp3. So I show here an example of how you would use find rather than ls, as we did before, to count the files in the directory containing the main mp3 file. I won't read this out, but because it's got it's pretty much the same, except that inside the process substitution is a find command, the same find command we just talked about, or similar. That's just really to say find is a good way of working with loops that you want to use in the context of finding files, which is a common thing to do. And it's partly because one of the discussion points around this area included the process of going through a list of files in a directory and performing some operation on them. So that's a very common thing to want to do. So I thought I'd finish off with just a brief bit about the extended patterns that you get when you enable the xglob option. Now, I talked quite a bit about this in show 2293, and there's a command called shopt, S-H-O-P-T, and you can set xglob on using that. And it's explained in that particular show. When I was talking about this, I discovered that my workstation running Debian has got extglob enabled by default because I use the bash completion extension. I think there's a very good chance that everybody is doing that, because I think that's a default in a lot of versions of Linux. So you might well find that extglob is switched on for you already. And we talked in that particular show, 2293, about the extended matching patterns that you could use when you had that option switched on. So one thing you can do is demonstrated in the next example. And here we're using a for loop, which consists of for space f, which is the variable we're going to set to each value, in, and then the extended glob pattern is plus open parenthesis I vertical bar sa vertical bar t close parenthesis asterisk dot mp3. What that means is select files which begin with an I with the letters sa or with the letter t and do things with them. So as you run the for loop, a list of such files will be returned, and the loop will process that list. So after that pattern, we have semicolon space do space echo, then in quotes $f semicolon done. So that's a loop which will simply echo the values that come back, and the pattern, just as a bare pattern within the loop, will successively return names of files that match. And we get back two files. One is called salamis.mp3, and the next one is theorize.mp3. We didn't get back any files that begin with I. The only one that exists is in that subdirectory. So we've discovered here that doing things this way, we don't go into the subdirectory, unlike when we use find in its default form. And in this case, the glob pattern returns the file names in sorted order, and they don't have the path name on the front. So this can be quite a good way of finding files, avoiding ls and avoiding find, and in cases where things are relatively simple. If you've got much more complex requirements, you have file names with funny characters in, or you want to do much more complicated matching than the big guns, as I've said here, of the find command are often needed. Thought it was worth mentioning future topics. We're going to be looking at other things that have been mentioned in this particular episode. So I definitely want to do something on arrays quite soon, maybe even the next show in this series. I want to talk about Bash's arrays, types of arrays, how you initialize them, how you access them, etc. You'll have seen bits and pieces of this along the way, some today in fact, but I want to just do the whole thing as a more formal description. Talk more about the find command, as I've already said. There's also things to be said about the read command, which we haven't really looked at yet. Read is very powerful, but there are issues with it that might catch you out, so we'll look at them. I was planning to include that in this show, but I thought it would get far too long if I did. So we'll be doing them in the next few episodes of this group of shows. Okay, that's it then for now, and I hope you found that useful. Okay, bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.